I'm never saying the words I love you because that's really not appropriate in the workplace, but it's demonstrating to people that that's what it is so that they experience it that way, but that you're expecting high performance at the same time. And as long as people feel that, they'll perform for you.
Welcome to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast, where we explore what it really takes to sell, lead, and grow a business, and ultimately, live well. In every episode, we go beyond tactics to discover how entrepreneurs and leaders across different sectors are growing with love, impact, and integrity. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Jason Mark Campbell Podcast. We're going to have a great conversation with someone who was bold enough as a pioneer to bring the word heart into leadership a little earlier than how most organizations are now finally adapting, finally realizing the research is catching up and people are understanding that this is going to be one of the key skills we need to develop if we want to be successful in business, grow our startups, and really manage our teams better. Mark C. Crowley is joining me, leadership pioneer, best-selling author, and for over 25 years, he's led large-scale teams to record-breaking success in America's largest financial institutions. Something I didn't know from his bio, but from a short conversation before we hit record, he's extensively worked within sales teams as well and applied these principles there. So we're definitely going to talk a little bit about its application in sales because that's always something I have a little bit of a passion about. If you know, you know. From there, the book that he wrote, Lead from the Heart, Transformational Leadership for the 21st Century, came out in 2011. And now, many years forward, a new book coming out from him, The Power of Employee Well-Being, Move Beyond Commitment to Build Flourishing Teams. It's just come out. And we're going to talk a lot more about how to make sure the teams are functioning properly, ourselves as leaders are operating from the heart, and why that makes us so much more effective. And if you aren't familiar with Mark, you'll also know that he has been running some of the most respected podcasts in the space, Lead from the Heart. And we're going to talk more about that, the journey and all. Mark, welcome to the show.
Looking forward to it. This is going to be great. Thanks for having me, Jason.
You're cut from the same cloth. We're talking about heart. We're talking about love. You know what's funny is I have a guest who came on my show who released a book which was called Selling from the Heart. I had Selling with Love. I reached out to him. I'm like, let's have a conversation. We had a bit of that brain exchange.
I've been on his show as well.
There you go. He's a good guy.
Very good guy.
You chose the word heart, but it came with a bit of a risk, or you basically decided boldly to put the word heart into leadership when organizations weren't quite ready. What has changed in the last few years in the receptivity for companies and leaders to say, like, oh yeah, the heart's maybe a good thing?
COVID is the direct answer. I think what happened is, so just to give you just a little bit of background on this, I didn't have to call it Lead from the Heart, like we were talking about right before we started recording. Like, I was encouraged, just call it, literally recommended, killer engagement, because people were all over engagement in that moment. And like, the recommendation was, you know, when you're speaking or talking to someone, just use heart like a Trojan horse. Oh, you know, one more thing I want to mention. And I'm like, that's not like who I am. That's not true, right? So I had to make the decision to hold on to it. But I grew up, I'll spare you the details, but not a very good upbringing, very painful, lots of loss. And I was psychologically and emotionally abused by my father. And then he kicked me out of the house when I was 18 with no financial support at all going into college. And so what happened was that when I started managing people, I unconsciously started to give people everything that I always wanted and didn't get. And it tended to be love. I mean, interestingly enough, it was somebody that thoughtfully directed me, someone who cared about me. How'd you do on your test? Congratulations. Oh, you didn't do well? You'll do better next time. All that kind of stuff. Somebody make me feel safe. Someone to say, I see the potential in you and I want to help you grow it. I did all of those things and every team that I managed flourished. And I was 43 years old and a woman who had worked for me for 20 years just walked into my office one day and she said, you realize you manage people completely different than everybody else here. This is financial services, right? So it was fear and intimidation. If you don't hit your goals, something bad's going to happen to you. And here I am telling people, I believe in you. You're going to do fantastic. I'm teaching them. I'm coaching them. I'm elevating their performance. And we're just killing it consistently. And I only then at 43 did I put the pieces together that I had been managing people in response to this. So fast forward, I end up refining this, really understanding it, not so that you and I could be speaking or that I could write the books, but that I could just be a more informed leader because I knew I was onto something. And so I did that. And then I decided to leap my organization and write a book. And originally it was just going to be do these things, do these practices, because these are the things I've learned really work and will influence people in a profound way. And a friend of mine, 10 months into the process, called me up just to see how I was doing. And he goes, you are going to explain this, right? You are going to tell people, like, you know, how you got there and why it's going to work for them. And I go, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, people, you're going to think they need a shitty childhood in order to lead this way. I was like, oh my God, he's right. Like, I've done none of this work. I just thought people would take me at my word. So I spent over a year looking for research and everything lined up. I mean, major people just unhappy at work consistently and all the reasons completely aligned to what I was going to be prescribing. But that same friend goes, you better figure out why people scaled mountains for you so consistently, because I have observed it. I know you have this influence, but I don't know why, and you don't know why. So sitting right where I am, looking out my window, I spent like a week going, what was it? And I realized, like, was I affecting the hearts in people? And that's what did it for me. I found research that confirmed that that's exactly what I was doing. And so I think to answer your question, I had to go out with that language because I knew it was true. I knew the science showed that the heart and the mind are connected and the heart is influencing our choices and our decisions. But it took from 2011 to 2020 for people to really buy in. And it was because of COVID, because people had a whole year alone. And they're asking themselves the important questions, Jason, am I happy with my marriage? Am I in the right relationship? Am I in the right job? Am I in the right career? Do I work for someone who cares about me at all? And so we closed down for a year. People were deployed to their homes for a year. And then after that, in 18 months, 20% of American workers quit their jobs. So you go, okay, why with 20%? Like, that's a massive number. And I believe that it's because people answered the question, is this the place for me? Does anybody know who I am? Does anybody care about me? Does anybody love me here? Whether they use that language or not, you know better than anyone that they're asking that question. And I think people just went, I got to get the hell out of here. I'm going to go anywhere. It's got to be better than this place. So I think that's really what the driver is. It's bottom up. It's not top down. Sorry, it's a long answer, but I wanted to give you the context.
Context is important. And that does make a lot of sense. I mean, the time that we all had to think during COVID made us understand what is actually important. And then we started realizing we're going to spend most of our lives in the workplace. It might as well mean something. But here's one thing I'd want to kind of get out the way. And like, I bring a lot of guests on the show that speak about leadership. And obviously the bias that I have are people that have a very human first approach. And I feel like there's this, I don't know if it's a myth or a risk to take into consideration from a negative perspective. And I premise this by saying, if I'm thinking that if I'm going to be a nice person as a manager, that people will take advantage of me and the employees will slack off and I won't hit my target. Like, my instinct or dark instinct that's telling me, no, you can't do that. It's not going to work. People are lazy. People are this. Like, that exists. And I feel like in business circles, there's a lot of assumptions that probably are speaking about that. What have you witnessed to counter that hypothesis?
Well, I mean, I want to confirm it first that this is the reaction. Particularly, people saw the word heart and they immediately dismissed it. That, like, who the hell brings heart into leadership? You don't do that. People get soft in the middle. They take advantage of you. You know, we're not going to hit our goals. I'm going to look stupid. All the kinds of fantasies that people had. And it frustrated me because the combination of caring for or loving people. So I end my podcast say, the last thing I say is love your people. And been doing it for 7 years because that's the translation. Whether you ever, you don't have to say it to people, you just have to demonstrate it to them. But if you were to go up to people who worked for me over the years and say, hey, you work for Mark Crowley, like, what's one adjective that you would use to describe him? you would think it would be hard because everybody knows that this is where I've been living. And I wrote this book about it. I have a second edition. This is what I've been a proponent of for a long time. The people who work for me would say he's the most demanding guy I've ever worked for. So I think I want to make this point that when you support people as much as we're talking about here, when you give people all the things that I gave to people sort of unconsciously all those years, it elevates performance in a way that people are just so grateful because all of their needs are being met. At some point, after my friend Cecilia told me that, you know, I manage people very differently and I got a real grounding in it, I remember telling my team, nobody is supporting you this way. Like, I you guys have everything you could possibly need. So we're not going to be just like taking our goals and just aiming for that. Let's aim high. And people were being rewarded for it. So it wasn't as if I was asking him for my own interest. I was saying, hey, if you get more for doing more, let's do more. Because it's more satisfying, it's more gratifying, it feels great to win, feels great to succeed, you feel really proud of what you're doing, but you're learning in the process as well. And so, you know, literally I'm raising goals by like 40, 50%, and people are like, you can't do that, it's crazy. And I go, no, let's figure out how we can get there, and we always got there. But it starts with people wanting to support you and reciprocate the love. This is the theme of your show. When they are experiencing that, they want to give it back. This has been my experience.
Well, I feel like there's, depending on your character and the trust that you've built based on how you've operated as a leader, those can be two very different scenarios, right? Where you're like, let's increase all goals by 50%. In the way that you're almost challenging people to rise to the occasion versus let's raise the goals 50%. And it's like almost like a crazy dictatorship of telling people they need to do more and work harder. How to make sure you're not going into the wrong direction here?
Well, it's a fantastic question. So I'll just give you the answer the way that we did it. We were on a modified P&L, and the managers that worked for me, they were all managing very big teams. And the way they got paid was based on that model. So the company was asking across like 400 of bank branches in this situation all over the country. So they had this average that we were already beating. So it wasn't as if I was saying by 50% that you're going to be required to do work that is inconceivable. It was conceivable, but it was still slightly higher than what everybody else was doing. And I will say slightly, it was substantially less. But I just said, take this Excel spreadsheet home and just play with it. And just see what you have to sell more of, because everything had a value, so they could plug it in. One more of these, two more of these. And what people consistently found, Jason, was when they did the work, they were like, I can do that. Like, that's conceivable. And then they started to go, and if I do that, this is what I'm going to earn. And when people can do that, they're very motivated. They were very excited because it's like, I can do this. It wasn't as like I was imposing something that if you didn't make it, you were going to fail. I was imposing something that I believed that they could do because of the support that I was giving them. And I was right.
Is there a way we can measure, like if you're going to be setting some aggressive goals, and it sounds like the culture was already ready, people were very competent. Is there something we should be measuring before we bring this kind of management approach to make sure that we got the right people below us that are not just going to disconnect and say like, ah, that's impossible, and then they just disengage?
No. Every team I ever managed responded, because it's a human thing. We're really talking about human nature. When you care about people in all the ways that I described, when people feel that, we have a natural instinct to reciprocate. We are so grateful on so many levels that we want to give back. We want to support a manager. So you astutely said, I'd long ago established the trust. People knew I had their best interest at heart, no pun intended. They knew that I wanted the best for them. They knew where they stood with me. So if they weren't performing or something wasn't going well, I would tell them. I didn't want people going home on a Friday night worried, is Mark not happy with me? Am I not doing a good job? And then they have conversations with their partners all weekend long and their words like they've always knew. So there was just like all of their fundamental human needs were being met. And I think when you get that, then when you say to them, I'm going to challenge you, it wasn't as if I was being onerous or difficult. I go, I think we can do a lot better because we're just better. We're just so much better than everybody else. partly because of me, the support I'm giving, but partly because of who you've become, the growth. And they knew it. They could see it in themselves. So I'll give you an illustration of this. So the example that I was giving, the company came to us and they said, we want you to do, I'm just going to simplify it, simple numbers, $7,500. That was the goal. I won't have to explain it, but what I asked them to do in the context of that will seem crazy. So I said, the company wants us to do 7,500 every month, and I want us to do 14,000. And they immediately were like, okay, that's a little crazy. And then I had the Excel spreadsheets all ready, and I doled them out. I said, come back in a week. Let's go over them. And everybody came back. 35 of these people all came back running big businesses saying, I guess I didn't think this thing through. Like, I think we can do 14. The company did 6,900 in January, the very first month. We did 21,500. So they were aiming high already, but they didn't want to just aim for a target. So they started aiming higher than what I even asked them to do. So the president of the bank called me up and said, what are you doing? Because there's no other region in the country. And I said, you have to ask the people. I said, ask them. And so she did. She called up like six or seven of these managers. And the consistent feedback was, he loves us. That's what it's about. We want to do whatever we can to help that guy succeed because of what he's done for us. And I promoted people. I grew them. I gave them opportunities to, you know, develop in ways that were only related to them personally because of talents they had or interests they had. So it wasn't like a cookie cutter. This is the way I manage. It's like I manage you, Jason, in one way, and I manage Mike one way and Mary in a different way. And they could all feel that personalization. And you know what? On Friday nights, I'd come home, I'd have dinner, and I would pass out because it's exhausting to manage this way and to give to people that way. But, you know, it's been 20 years plus since I've managed that team. And I hear from them all the time and how they've never had anybody else like that in their careers. And I'm like, it was all worth it. Every bit of it was worth it.
So I'd have a question for maybe somebody who's, you know, has an organization, has a lot of staff under them, or they're a manager within an organization, has several staff under them, listening to this. And they're saying, you know what, I maybe want to step into what Mark is sharing with me, but maybe I'm starting in the negative. Maybe I've burned out my team a little bit. Maybe things aren't going so well, but I want to do better. Is there hope? Is there a way you can change? Are there first steps to take?
These are really wonderful questions. This is something that I've kind of like really just learned in a way that I never really thought of before because I never really needed to use it. But reset. Before you try to do something that everybody knows isn't your, you know, it's like you come in one day and you're wearing a three-piece suit and you've never wore one before and you're like, what's up with him? Like, you know, it's like, it's glaringly obvious that there's something going on here and it doesn't feel like good. You know, it's like, well, I don't know. Do we trust this? You know, it's sort of this unusual behavior. And I think what I would say is bring the team together and say, leadership is something you learn over time, and I feel that I've made some mistakes. I mean, I bet you people will cry if you said that to them because they want you to say this to them, but nobody ever does it, right? So if you worked for me, Jason, and I said, I'm really sorry. There are better, more informed ways, more humane ways of leading people. And I feel like in the urgency of hitting goals and, you know, not slowing down to kind of think about the influence that I was having, that I probably haven't affected you in a way that would motivate you to perform the way that you could perform, that would make you excel, but also it's mostly on me. So with your permission, I want to try some new things. I want to try to lead in a way that makes you feel cared for, valued, respected, that you have voice, that you're effectively loved. I'm telling you, you're going to get this because it's like, this is what people want. This is what people are so hungry for. But the final bow tie on this question is, don't do it if you're not sincere, and do not do it. You want to end your career, have that conversation. and then don't pull it off. Like, you got to fully commit to this hook, line, and sinker. You're on the high dive and you're jumping off and you're going to get back up on it and you're going to jump off again. You've got to be consistent with it, because you will be ruined if you make that commitment and you set people's hopes up so high and then, you know, bring them down to, oh man, I wanted so much to believe him or her, you know?
Mark, I'm like shaking my head. I'm laughing. And I have a feeling most listeners, as you said this, imagine that past boss that would actually have that moment. And you're right. Like, I could think of a past employer, which I was like, if they would just do this, God, it would rally the troops into a Braveheart moment like we've never seen before. And if they would have done that, I can't even imagine the amount of retention that would have been there, how much people would have put their blood on the line, ready to work, hustle, all of it. And they've never done it, right? Because on the second part of what you just shared is, I don't know how much they would have been able to commit to it. So maybe at first I was like, why doesn't every leader do that? And I realized, oh yeah, because if they do, they needed to commit. And I think for most leaders that are in that position, instinctively know that they aren't really ready to make that change in themselves.
There's two things I want to mention on this. One is, I mean, how spot on you are. Like, while I was writing my new book, The Power of Employee Wellbeing, I just got this inspiration. I'm like, okay, I'm going to say what I know to be true, which is, if anyone listening can think about where they feel the most successful in their life, like, think back on all the, where they got the most kudos, where they got the most joy and satisfaction, all that. And if 90% of them are individual accomplishments, you're probably not in the right role of being a leader of other people, because the orientation that you need is to be other focused, like a coach and, like, you know, sports coach. They're not like, hey, you know, there's 2 minutes left in the game and I'm benching you so I can get in and be the quarterback. It's like, that's not the way it works. The coach helps the players play so that they can perform and win the games. And that's the orientation that we need to have. But if your joy comes from individual accomplishments, you're never going to invest in people the way that you need to. Right? So I'm making it binary. I'm saying, go be an individual contributor, go find something else to do, but don't harm other people by being self-focused. So there's that. But the other one is a much more positive thing to say, which is that I meant to imply this by saying that I was highly demanding, that it's a balance. It's, I'm going to care about you and I'm going to support you and I'm going to teach you and coach you and invest in you. And I'm going to do everything in my power to help and enable you so that you can fulfill your dreams of work and have an experience of well-being at the same time. In exchange, I'm going to hold you accountable for performance. And that's the piece that the guy up on the diving board who's looking down and going, I don't know if I can commit to this. And they start climbing back down the ladder. Like, I'm not willing to take that risk. I'm saying take the risk, because caring about people is the influence to get them to perform. Holding them accountable is the piece that will help you sleep at night, particularly in the early stages. Like, I never worried about it after a while. Frankly, it was never in my consciousness that if I'm going to care about people, that they're going to exploit me and take advantage of me. So there's that. But if that's how you're starting, I would just say, just remember that you're reviewing performance with people and letting people know where they stand and holding them accountable and, you know, writing them up if they have to, if that's part of their discipline, or coaching them and helping them. But it's not just, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's, I'm caring about you. I'm never saying the words, I love you, because that's really not appropriate in the workplace. At least it isn't today. Maybe it will be. But it's demonstrating to people that that's what it is, so that they experience it that way, but that you're expecting high performance at the same time. And as long as people feel that, they'll perform for you.
The word tough love seems to come to mind. That should not be omitted from your management principles. But at the core, it's not just about being tough. It's tough love. So if the love's not there, then you're just being an a-hole, isn't it?
You know, let me just push back a little bit. I don't know how to interpret that. It's two things. It's, I'm caring about you because you work for me. And I happen to believe that my highest effectiveness as a leader is to support you the way that I know best. So I'm going to do that for you. I'm also going to hold you accountable. I don't want to mess with this. I don't want to mess with this suddenly, well, you're not performing. And so I'm pulling back my love, or I'm giving you tough love. Like, it's, this goes continue all the way to the last day. Like, you know, I mean, even when I've let people go, and you know, most of the time people leave because I'm communicating to them that it's, the performance just isn't there. And so I'd rather you do something about it than me. And most people do because they can see it. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want them to ever think that I'm duplicitous. Like, this is who I am as a leader. I'm going to care about you to the last day. And then if you leave and you go somewhere else, we're not going to be mortal enemies. I actually think that's the best thing that ever could happen for you, because when people aren't succeeding in a job, it's generally not because of anything other than they're not in the right job. If they love what they're doing, they're going to figure it out. That's my experience, right? So if you have to let someone go, or they end up leaving working for you, they're going to end up going someplace and doing something that they know is better. And like, I've had people come back to me and they're like, you wouldn't believe what I'm doing right now. I'm like taking people up in balloons, hot air balloons. Yeah. I'm like, well, it has nothing to do with what we were doing. I'm like, exactly. And they're happy. And I'm making that whole thing up. But the point is that people have a whole realm of opportunities. But if they're going to take people up in hot air balloons, I'm still going to be friends with them if I have any interaction with them, because still demonstrate. So it's not like I go, okay, shut it off, you know, or you're not hitting your numbers, so I can't love you anymore. You know, we're using the word love a lot here, but it's like, be consistent, be that person, embody it, and also hold people accountable.
You know, we talk a lot about the human nature. We're talking about the heart. We're talking about love. But it also sounds like the way that you've managed is very much grounded in the results. And it sounds like getting a very good grasp of the numbers to measure people's performance by is a core component to being effective in doing this. Because if you're just managing by feelings and no data, I feel like that's where it's a recipe of maybe a toxic work culture, isn't it?
100%. So, you know, I managed a lot of different businesses, and my company, many times I was like, are you crazy giving me these opportunities? But they thought that I was an effective leader. No one ever looked under the hood to see what I was doing. They just saw, that guy gets results, so let's put him over here. And so I had all these different experiences and proved that it was human. You know, it wasn't like, oh, well, those people, they'll respond to this, but not those people, or men won't, but women will, or age and those kinds of things. It's like, no, like everybody responded to it. And I think that what you have is, I just say it this way, that there's sort of this understanding in business that we don't care about people. Like, that's been our tradition. And so we've hired a lot of people into managerial roles that have never been expected to do this. And we're changing the paradigm on them. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you work in a pizza restaurant and you've been working there for 15 years. And you're the guy who can throw the dough up in the air, throw it on the plank, put the right amount of cheese on it, the right amount of sauce. And it's like instinct for you. And one day, the management comes in and they go, Jason, we've been doing some market research and we're going in the chicken business. And you're like, chicken business? Like, but I'm a pizza guy. And I go, well, I know, we're going to teach you how to make chicken. People go into fear because they feel they're so good at whatever it is that they're doing, i.e. managing people the way they manage them for the last 10, 15 years, that when you introduce this idea that you need to be caring and supportive of people, that it just wobbles them, you know, and it's like, that's where all the resistance comes in. So this goes to your question about data. I started every single meeting, and I've taken organizations that had no orientation this way and migrated them. So I've, you know, you have to be patient with teaching managers how to do this. But what I would do is I would begin every meeting with recognition. We would look at all of our key metrics and stack rank by, you know, all of them. So 35 people, you could see where they in all the key goals. And we would go through what I call institutionalizing recognition. So we'd take a big goal. We'd say, okay, here, how did everybody do? And I would acknowledge anyone that was at 100%, even if someone was 500%, which is exaggerated. But the point is that I wouldn't just pick the top three or the top four. I would type any of them. So if you had 30 people and 25 of them hit the goal or exceeded it, you have to thank all of them. You have to acknowledge it. You have to applaud them all. You have to take the time to do that. So people were getting like, and I gave them candy. So I had a classic or a ritual. So if you hit a goal, you got a bag of candy and you got to take it back to your team. So the more bags of candy you took, the more success you felt you had. So it became this really cool ritual. But in the data, what we would do is we would talk about what people did in order to hit the goals. And I knew what they did to hit the goals. But it wasn't like, well, Bill, congratulations, you were 200% a goal. And I know you rode your people really hard. So, you know, way to go. It was, I would call out the manager, you know, like Jill, you know, I was at your branch and I see how you're growing your people and developing your people and encouraging your people and making them feel that these goals are achievable for them. And that's translating into your team success. What I've just done is convey to the other 29 people in the room, this is what he's valuing. This is how you get there with Mark. Not beating up the people, but doing it this way. So by the time I left that job of doing it just for 3 years, that whole region of 30 managers managed exactly the way that I managed. You could talk to the people that worked there and they would say, I feel loved working here. I feel supported. I feel there's opportunities to lead this way. And so what I'm really saying is call out, put a spotlight on the behaviors you're looking for, reinforce them. And most people, not all, but most people will see that's what gets the love around here. Then I'm going to change my behavior. And then at some point you have to call out the managers that never get on board and say, we've been doing this now for 18 months and you're like the only one that's really not on board. What do we have to do? Is this the right job for you? So you have to have that heart to heart. You have to have that difficult conversation, but you can't allow for one or two people to drag the whole thing down. Everybody has to get on board with the culture you're trying to create.
I manage an organization. Like what I do is usually jump into organization as a general manager and support teams, create some changes. When you spoke about the reset, oftentimes what organizations decide is when they want to make a change, they bring me in and I'm the reset. But I fall into a certain trap. And that trap is I'm often overextending myself, becoming like that coach that wants to jump into the soccer field and start kicking the ball around. Okay. And to be honest, I've been having a lot of conversation. The theme of my podcast over the few episodes has been around leadership, has been around employee well-being, has been about being a human first approach. And I've caught myself in a lot of ways that I've been doing things probably wrong. I feel like I'm missing where I should be putting most of my energy to be as effective as I can be using the leading from the heart methodology. And when I have extra time, I feel like I want to go and execute. I'm a sales guy, so I can obviously jump on the phone and do sales. I'm a marketing guy. I can go and start running some marketing campaigns, writing copy. And I always get tempted to do that. I'd love to ask, if I'm not in meetings with people, if you're an effective manager, where is your time best spent as a manager when you're not in meetings to be more effective?
Coaching, teaching people really is what it's about. So, I mean, it's interesting, but most of the jobs that I've had in my career, honestly, all of the leadership jobs, with the exception of the job that I had right after college, I just stayed in the same company and they promoted me to assistant manager and then I left. And then from that point forward, every job, every team that I've managed did something that I had no experience doing myself. So it never handicapped me. It made me feel insecure at times. But, you know, it's like, do you know anything about this? I knew everything about it. I just never do it. You know, I practice it. So at one point, the last job that I had, I managed 4,000 investment brokers all across the country. They were selling stocks and bonds. I've never done that. They never sold insurance or any of those products. But what I was really good at was sales management, building trust and rapport, helping people see where their limitations were in their approach. So when I got into that, believe me, I completely understand the temptation to like, I know how to do this. Let me just get this done, right? I mean, that's what you're experiencing. That's what you're feeling, and it's normal. But if you can say, okay, I'm going to take what I know, my talents, and I'm going to sit down with somebody. I'm going to say, whatever it is you're doing, are you calling people on the phone? If you're going to call somebody to follow up with them, let me just observe you. And I'll give you some feedback. Are you cool with that? You know, I'll give you, if it's really positive, I'm going to tell you positive. If I can give you any one piece of advice, but it's all here to help you. So, you know, and don't feel like this is punishment or anything like that. I'm here to help. And that's why I'm here. Just between us. So you know, once you've built the trust and they go, okay, then take your talent and teach them. If you can give them one thing, I find that like when I'm coaching people, it's just obvious. It's just like, you see it. You're like, okay, approach it this way and you're going to get infinitely better response from people. And this is obviously, I've built up this intuition over years, but you have it. So leverage it. And the other thing that I would say is, if you're going to go into an organization and you're the fixer, then it's okay for you to be the fixer. Just don't be the fixer forever. And I've worked with an organization where they brought in a fixer and then they brought in somebody that they felt could run the business, and the fixer continued to try to be the fixer. And the person they brought in was like, well, what am I supposed to do if you're still doing that? So you got to have the discipline to recognize where you are in the moment of time. But if you want to go in and install new systems, a new methodology, a new approach, even a new team, go do that. But be aware of when that's accomplished, a week, a day, a month, whatever, you know, depending upon how challenging it is, then go, okay, Jason, it's time for you to back out now. Now go help other people. Now let people run this. One of the most essential parts of love in the context of what we've been talking about is appreciating people. And most people, when you say to them, if I thank somebody today for something, should I thank them again later on in the day if they did something else? And they go, well, probably not, because, you know, the one praise that I gave them earlier is probably going to be enough. But, you know, if you do too much praising, people are going to take advantage of you, the thing we were talking about earlier. And that's absolutely nonsense. So if somebody hits a goal and they come into your office and they go, hey, Jason, you're not going to believe this, but our December goal, we're done in October or, you know, September. And you go, that's unbelievable. That's so incredible. Congratulations. Like, how'd you do it? And like, are you set up for January now? Are you going to be like riding the wave here? Like you're having this joyful conversation because you're happy. It's making you meet your goals, right? And then 4 hours later, they come in and they go, hey, I've been working on this other project you gave me, and I think I found the solution. And you're like, what's the solution? And they tell you, and you're like, that's brilliant. A lot of leaders will go, okay, back to work. Thank you for that. You know, and instead of giving them the same reaction, it's like, that's incredible. Like, first of all, you hit your goal earlier, and now you're coming in with this. Like, this is phenomenal. Do you realize, like, how grateful I am to you? And it just, like, seeps into their hearts. It literally goes into their bodies, and they're like, I want more of this. So they're going to continue to perform for you. When a lot of managers think it's like, I got to go into my wallet every time I'm giving them some praise or appreciation. And it's like, you're missing the whole point of human nature. So that would be like a really big one. Just start appreciating your people and be consistent about it and be generous about it and don't begrudge it. It's hard for some people to get over this hurdle, but that's what we're talking about.
Mark, you went out as a pioneer, bringing these methodologies into literature before the workplace was ready. Academia picked up on it. They started bringing it into universities around America. Now you continue, you have a new book that's coming out, and the organizations have finally caught up. They're finally realizing that some of the stuff you teach works. You've brought in the results. People replicating your method are getting some results. Are you being hopeful about what we see in the workplace coming in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, you know, it's another really wonderful question. So I have some reason to be skeptical, even though people would describe me as being very optimistic, almost, you know, too optimistic. But I paid my dues. So, you know, the first book came out in 2011. The next one didn't come out until 2022. So 11 years later. But when it came out, Jason, in the second edition, there were a lot of people who realized, like, he said that back then, and now look at the world, right? So, but the well-being piece is like, I'm basically saying in this book that it's time to stop talking about engagement. We have talked about this and done nothing about it. The numbers are the same as they were 12 years ago when I wrote an article and announced that only 30% of Americans were engaged at work and 21% globally. And the numbers are the same today. And I saw this, I got this email from Gallup and I'm like, this is ridiculous. We've got to stop talking about engagement because we've never done anything to fix it. So I know that where I'm taking this with saying that there's a direct correlation between employee well-being, which by the way is feelings, which is all about the heart, is just a natural progression of all of this. And I think that people are seeing this, but something interesting happened like over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So what I've tried to do with my own podcast is deliberately bring in people who can reinforce the message. But I mean, like ring the bell, ring the bell, ring the bell. And so I've had two people back to back who are absolute stars. One's a Yale Business School professor, one of the most successful professors there. Another one is a Harvard University professor. And they're both talking about well-being. And they both looked me in the eye and said, everything you've been talking about is happening now. Like they wanted me to know. It was like, it was love. It was, this is the coolest, generous thing. It's like, do you realize? So just in case you've lost perspective over all this time that no one's ever going to get it, that people are getting it now. And I just love that. So yeah, so it's making me very hopeful.
Well, I hope to be one of the champions to bring the message forward and that it's getting implemented across at least myself. I'll be taking some of these lessons into the roles that I'm taking. Also, for every listener that is leading organizations, building organizations, or managing within an organization, everything you've shared here is extremely applicable and a great way for people to actually look at management in a very different way that brings the results. And great, in an age where people are all going into AI and thinking about the future, the humanity seems to be the element that's going to be the most important. And the methodologies you share are actually very effective. I'm going to encourage everyone who's listening here, The Power of Employee Well-Being, Move Beyond Commitment to Build Flourishing Team is just come out. You can pick up a copy. And there's one thing I do want to ask you, Mark, which is, you know, you worked in sales as well, so this is going to be really fun, but I always ask the question, what does selling with love mean to you? For all my guests, I'd love to ask you as well.
You know, I think it starts with sincerity, right? So it's like, if I'm selling you something, and I know it's not good for you, that's not selling with love, right? If I'm thinking that I need to make a sale and you're a mark, I know it sounds dark, but that kind of is a mentality sometimes, a lot of times, particularly in the business that I'm in. It's interesting. The common denominator, I have a real estate broker's license in California and I have securities licenses with FINRA. And if you look at what the common denominator is, the reason that they have all these laws and licenses and they make it so rigorous is to prevent fraud. Like that's the answer. So people will try to sell you something just to make a commission. So start there. It's like, am I selling something that I believe in? Am I selling something that can really help people? Because if you don't, it's like you're going to spend your whole life in dark karma. Like you're just going to go home every night and go, I sold that guy, but Jesus, like he's got 3 kids in school. You can't really afford this, but I hammered it onto him and all that. I think that's the big part of it is like align yourself to what you're selling. And then the other is that there has to be a rapport that's sustained. So if I try to build trust and rapport with you and I get you to buy something from me, unless it's a transactional thing, like it's come into my restaurant to eat, right? But even then you can apply what I'm going to say. But if you're selling things to people and these become your clients, then you need to be just as sincere in checking in with them and seeing how they're doing. And one little secret, ask them how they're doing. Ask them how they're doing personally. What's going on in their life? This is a mirror of what I did with my people. Like, I want to know who they are outside of work and what matters to them. Why do you come in here every day and work here? Like, who are you working for? What motivates you? And what are your challenges in life? You can find out so much about people when you just ask that question, how are you doing? and how are you feeling? Because it's all about feelings. We ask people, what do you think about this? It's like, don't ask them what they think. Ask, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about your life right now? How do you feel about what's going on with you? And they will tell you, and you will be informed, and you can use that knowledge to reinforce relationships where people, when they're thinking about buying something, like whatever it is that you're selling, that they go, I already know who I'm going to. It's like an automatic, because that guy cares about me, gal, you know, like man or woman, animal, vegetable. If somebody feels that there's somebody out there that's trustworthy and cares about them and wants to know them and take the time, and a lot of salespeople go, I don't have time for that. I got to make 20 calls today and I got to make 5 sales. And you know what? These are just transactional relationships with me. I'm like, okay, at some point those transactional relationships are going to dry up because, you know, there's not an unlimited number of people that want what you want. And the easiest way for you to sell something is for somebody to call you up and say, hey, I'd like to buy 5 of these from you today, as opposed to you calling and going, remember me? We talked 6 years ago and, you know, I'm just checking to see if you might want 5 more of these. And you're like, who are you? And what'd you call me for? And I bought something from you. Like, I'm being facetious, but we're all human. Everything we've talked about for the last hour applies to your clients, not just the people that work for you.
Mark, thank you for your voice and your message, for everything you've shared to inspire people to think bigger and to do something that's much more heart-oriented. I'm also going to encourage everyone to go check Lead from the Heart podcast. He's also been rating in Fast Company, but the podcast is truly where you're going to find all of the interviews, all the insights, and so much more about Mark's work. And it's been a joy to have the conversation, have you on my show. Thank you so much for the time. And pick up a copy of the book. It just came out, The Power of Employee Well-Being. I'll grab my own copy and I'll make sure that I get to apply some of these principles in the work that I do as well. Mark, thank you again for your wisdom.
Thank you. Best of success to you, Jason. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast. And of course, keep selling with love.
Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.